77th Psalm, Psalm 77. We'll read the entire psalm, there's 20 verses. I cried unto God with my voice, even unto God with my voice, and he gave ear unto me. In the day of my trouble I sought the Lord. My sore ran in the night and ceased not. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. Selah. Thou holdest mine eyes waking. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I called remembrance my song in the night. I commune with mine own heart, and my spirit made diligent search. Will the Lord cast off forever? Will he be favorable no more? Is his mercy clean gone forever? Doth his promise fail forevermore? Hath God forgotten to be gracious? Hath he in anger shut up his tender mercy? Selah. And I said, this is my infirmity, but I will remember the days of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember thy wonders of old. I will meditate also of all thy work and talk of thy doings. Thy way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great a God as our God? Thou art the God that doest wonders. Thou hast declared thy strength among the people. Thou hast with thine arm redeemed thy people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. Selah. The waters saw thee, O God, the waters saw thee. They were afraid. The depths also were troubled. The clouds poured out water. The skies sent out a sound. Thine arrows also went abroad. The voice of thy thunder was in the heaven. The lightnings lighted the world. The earth trembled and shook. Thy way is in the sea, and thy path in the great waters, and thy footsteps are not known. Thou leddest thy people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. This is a psalm that was given, it says here, if you have an inscription in your Bible, to the chief musician, to Jeduthun. He is first mentioned in Psalm 39. And again in Psalm 62, and then here in Psalm 77. From 1 Chronicles 16:41, we learn that he was one of David's chief musicians. So this psalm was to be given to him. He, of course, would set it to music. The psalmist in this particular song is Asaph. Asaph. Psalm 50, and Psalms 70 through 83 are attributed to Asaph. So the question must be asked, who is this Asaph that is mentioned in the Psalms? From 1 Chronicles 6, verse 31 and 32, we learn that there were a number of Levites that King David assigned as leaders in song for the worship services in the tabernacle. And one of these men, according to 1 Chronicles 6, verse 39, was Asaph. So we have the musician, and we have this leader in song, Asaph. According to 2 Chronicles 29 and 30, both Asaph and David were skilled poets, and Asaph is also mentioned as a seer there in 1 Chronicles 6, or 2 Chronicles 29 and verse 30, or a prophet. So the man who wrote this psalm is a leader in song, and he is a prophet or a seer. Again, Psalm 50 is attributed to him, and then Psalms 73 to 83. In this psalm, I read this psalm one day last week, noticed something. In the psalmist is very perplexed in his mind because it seemed to him that he had been abandoned by the Lord. He relates how that he cried unto the Lord, seeking to find comfort. In the psalm, he's basically reviewing his life. But the thing that that struck me is, again, there's 20 verses. The psalm is very, very clearly divided into two parts, with verse 10 being the transition point. It's almost like reading two completely different psalms, though it isn't. The subject of the message is perspective makes a difference. Perspective makes a difference. Some will say that perspective is reality. That's foolishness. It could be the individual's reality. But if your perception is skewed, then I guess that makes your reality quite skewed as well. But perspective does make a difference. We all know that by experience. We want to consider 2 points. First of all, the clear difference in the psalmist's state of the mind between the first half of the psalm and the second half. And then we'll want to see what made the difference. What caused the difference? But first of all, let's consider the clear difference in the psalmist's state of mind. The first part of the Psalms, verses 1 through 9, is entirely different in character and in tone from the second part, verses 11 through verse 20. In fact, if you put these two parts side by side, and if you do that, you cannot help but notice a very sharp and marvelous difference between these two halves of the psalm. The first part of the psalm is almost all darkness. The second part is all light. The first part of the psalm is characterized by disappointment. The one who's speaking in the first half of the psalm, same one that speaks in the second half, but in the first half, he has almost completely lost his hold upon God. While in the second half, you have the song of a man marching with God to victory against all opposition. Again, the psalmist is looking at his life. But what a difference there is between these two parts of the psalm. So as we look at the two parts, you have to remind yourself that it's written at the same time by the same man. So let's look, first of all, at the first part of the psalm, and then we'll look at the second part. Notice huge contrast. And we're not going to go into any great detail. But the first part of the psalm, it begins in verse 1 and verse 2 with the prayer of one who is greatly pained and bothered. Asaph had fled to the Lord, verses 1 and 2, with a cry. He says, I cried, verse 1, unto God. Expression of pain and sorrow. And God heard him. We see in verse 1. In verse 2, he says, in the day of my trouble, in the day of my difficulties, the day of my inconveniences and anxiety and distress and unpleasantness, he said, I sought or I looked for the Lord. While he was doing that, he says, my sore, which speaks of pain and hurt, ran or continued on in the night. So notice, he mentions the day in verse 2, in the day of my trouble. And then my sore ran in the night. So here is a man, day and night, without rest from his trouble. This is the one who's writing this psalm. This speaks of the depth of his trouble, day and night. It's also very personal. I cried, I sought the Lord. Then notice in verse 2 that he refused to be comforted. He said, my soul, that is the most crucial part of my being, my innermost self, which speaks of the depths also of his trouble. My soul refused. My soul refused. That's willful. That's willful. My soul refused, or my soul declined, my soul rejected to be comforted. My soul refused to be eased and reassured. I cried unto God. I sought God day and night in my trouble. My sore ran, or my pain just continued on, and I refused. My soul refused to be comforted. Whether people will admit it or not, we've all been there. We've all been there. Where our soul refuses to be comforted. Verse 3, he says, I remembered God and was troubled. So the memory of God did not bring him any peace. Now this has to be kept in light of the context of my soul refused to be comforted. But I remembered God and was troubled. What he's telling us is that he sought God in some way to bring him comfort, but the memory of God brought him no comfort whatsoever. The memory of God brought him no peace whatsoever. Verse 3 also, he gave way to complaining. He says, I complained. I protested. I found fault. I complained. And my spirit, as a result of his complaining, was overwhelmed. So here's a man who refuses to be comforted. He thinks of God, and that troubles him even more. And he begins to complain. And that resulted in his spirit being overwhelmed or submerged, engulfed, defeated and conquered. So now here is a defeated man. And may we say that complaint brings no relief whatsoever. It never has, it never will. But rather brings us further into the grip of trouble. We can fuss, we can complain. That does not give us peace. That does not give us comfort. But the grip of trouble just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And this is where the psalmist was. In verse 4, we see that he was very restless. Thou holdest mine eyes waking. In other words, God kept him awake. Remember, it was day and night. He went through the day troubled. He would lay down at night, and it was as if God was holding his eyes open, and he could not sleep. The result of that, and was troubled. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. Awake all night, I am so troubled. I am so anxious. I am so disturbed and bothered. I am so unsettled and agitated and distressed that I cannot speak. This is a man who is suffering. Verse 5 and 6. He begins to think upon his past experiences. Notice, he says, I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I remember a time when I could sing in the night. I commune with mine own heart, and my spirit made diligent search. So what he's telling us there is he remembers a time when he could sing in the night. He remembers a time when he had a song for the darkest hours. He's recalling happy days. But if you do that, many times all that does is worsen your misery for the present. And that's what was happening here. He is in trouble day and night. So he begins to think about when he used to be happy. His soul has refused to be comforted. There is no comfort anywhere. He thinks of God, and that troubles him. So he begins to think of the past, and then you get discouraged about the present, because the present isn't like the past. I mean, it's a vicious cycle. He said, I commune with mine own heart, and my spirit made diligent search. That is, in his anguish, he is diligently searching. He's diligently searching his personal experience, his past. He's diligently searching his memory, his entire self. He is searching for what? Healing. He is searching for comfort. He's seeking to find a reason to praise. He's seeking to find some comfort. He's seeking to regain what he once had. But the more he did it, the more he realized it wasn't happening. It wasn't there. Eventually, which will be the case, he gives over to despair. Verses 7 through verse 9. He asks 6 questions. He says, will the Lord cast off forever? Will he be favorable no more? Is his mercy clean, gone forever? Doth his promise fail forevermore? Hath God forgotten to be gracious? Hath he in anger shut up his tender mercies? Selah. He's now given over to despair. The psalmist, he's been trying to find comfort in his sorrow. He's examining his sorrow by really standing in the midst of it and really can't see beyond his sorrow. And this results in him beginning to question the Lord. And as you read those 6 questions, they're like a wail of despair. Here is a man who is now in despair. He feels, by the questions, he feels that he has been cast off by God. This is his perspective. That's not reality, but it's his perspective. And it's his skewed view of reality. But he feels that he has been cast off by God. He feels that God's grace has dried up toward him. And that all of God's mercy toward him is gone. And that all the promises of God toward him are ineffective. And all he can see is the anger of God. That's all he can see. In these questions, or wail of despair, they are questions concerning the love of God toward him. He's beginning to question God's love toward him. He's beginning to question God's faithfulness and God's ability. He is questioning the very person of God, whether he realizes it or not. He imagines that in the darkness of his present condition, that God has forgotten him. So in these first 9 verses, we see what he's thinking. But as you view this first part of the psalm, these first 9 verses, without a doubt, he's in much agony. He's in much pain. But we have to notice his mindset. We have to notice the perspective of the psalmist at this time. In verses 1 through 10, there are 23 personal pronouns. 23 references to self. 23. The word I is used 11 times. The word my is used 9 times. Me, 1 time. And mine, 2 times. In 10 verses, 23 references to self. Now also in those 10 verses, there are 14 references to God. 6 in verses 1 through 4. 6 references to God in verses 1 through 4. 7 in verses 7 through 9, which is where he's questioning, and 1 in verse 10. So we have these 7 references to God, or these 14 references to God. The 7 references in verses 7 through 9, which would be half of his references to God, are in the negative. They're all in the negative. Every reference to God in verses 7 through 9 is in the negative. So we have 14 references to God, and at least half of them are in the negative, or in a wrong light. They are used in a sense of unbelief. Now, I believe it can be argued that the 2 references to God in verses 3 and 4, I remembered God and was troubled. And then in verse 4, thou holdest mine eyes waking. I believe you could argue that those 2 references to God are also in the negative. So that gives us 9 references to God out of 14 that are in the negative. So that means more than half of his references to God are negative. So here's a man, 23 times he refers to self, 14 times he refers to God, and 9 of those 14 times he is viewing God in a negative light. I'm here to tell you that's a wrong perspective. That'll get you in trouble. That'll get you in trouble when your reference to yourself is almost twice as much as God. That'll get you in trouble. And when more than half of your references to God are in a wrong light, you're in trouble. Your perspective is all wrong. And this is where the psalmist is. In this first part of the psalm, Asaph, for the most part, views his trouble through the lens of self. For the most part, he views his troubles through the lens of self. And for the most part, 9 out of 14, his reference or his perception of God is inaccurate. It is skewed. So in this part of the psalm, Asaph is overwhelmed with a sense of self and present grief. That brings us to the second part of the psalm, and this is what struck me when reading it, noticing this difference. Coming to the second part of the psalm, it's the same picture. He's still troubled. Same thing still going on. But there's an entirely different focus. You read verses 11 through verse 20, and there are only three references to self. Only three. And they are all found in verses 11 and 12. He uses the word I three times. Those are the only references to self. So in the first 10 verses, 23 references to self. In the second half of the psalm, verses 11 through 20, three references to self. That's quite a change. That is quite a difference. In verses 11 through 20, there are 24 references to God. 24. Do you realize that's eight times as many as there is to self? This is a drastic change. From 23 and 14, 23 references to self, 14 references to God. And again, we have to keep in mind that nine of those references to God are inaccurate. But then we come to the second part, and there are only three references to self, and 24 references to God. And you read verses 11 through 20, and all 24 references to God, all 24 pronouns referring to God are in a positive light. He's not only seeing God more in the second half, he's seeing God accurately. If you see God, but you see God in a wrong light, all that does is bring more trouble into your soul. That's why he said in the first part, I remembered God and was troubled. Soul refused to be comforted. But here in the second half, 24 references to God, all in a positive light. So he is praising God for who he is. As you read verses 11 through 20, we're not going to take the time, but as you read those verses, he is praising God for who he is, and he is praising God for what he has done. Just a moment ago, he was asking God if he had ceased to be gracious. Just a moment ago, he was questioning God's faithfulness. But I noticed something else. In the first part of the psalm, Again, 23 references to God, or 14 references to God. He acknowledges God in the first part of the psalm. There is an acknowledgement of God. But in the second part of the psalm, there is a reverence for God. There is a faith toward God. The second part of the psalm, self has dropped into insignificance. That's a huge difference. That's a huge difference right there. When self drops in insignificance, you've come a long way in your troubles. And that's what's happened. In the second part of the psalm, self is lost in God. 24 references to God, 3 to self. Self is lost in God. Self is overwhelmed by a sense of God. But notice also that in verse 11, the first part of the verse, he's talking about himself and he's talking about God. He said, I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember thy wonders of old. And we just want to look at the first part. I will remember the works of the Lord. He is talking from third person. He is talking about God. Then there is a change. He then, the rest of the psalm, changes from third person to first person. That is, he's no longer talking about God. He's talking to God. Big difference. Huge difference. Notice verse 11. Again, I will remember the works of the Lord. He's talking about God. Surely I will remember thy. Now he's talking to God. I will remember thy wonders of old. I will meditate also of thy work and talk of thy doings. Thy way, O God. And you just go on. He has gone from talking about God to talking with God. What a difference between the first part of the psalm and the second part of the psalm. So what made the difference? Well, verse 10 is the transition point. But the contrast between the two parts of the psalm is very, very distinct. Again, it's almost like you're reading two completely different psalms written by two completely different people in two completely different set of circumstances. It's written by one man in the same circumstances in both halves of the psalm. But something has happened. Again, the first half of the psalm is all darkness. Disappointment. It's the words of a man who has lost touch with the Lord. The second half of the psalm, completely different. In the first half of the psalm, there is anguish and there is no comfort. There is no healing. There is no relief. But in the second part, you read the man has a song in the night. The second part of the psalm is a new light or different perspective upon his life. It's a new point of vision, a different way of looking at it, a new outlook. You see, the troubles of the psalmist are still present in the second half of the psalm, but there's been a radical change in his perspective. He's viewing it from a completely different lens. And the turning point is verse 10. In verse 10, Asaph is brought face to face with two truths. And I believe the Holy Spirit, of course, brought him face to face with these two truths. And that's what changed his perspective. First of all, he is brought to see himself. In the midst of his wailing, again, verses 7 through 9 is like a wail of despair. He says in verse 10, "And I said, this is my infirmity." Those words struck me. This is my infirmity. What in the world is he talking about? He is brought to recognize, first of all, that he has an infirmity. What is an infirmity? An infirmity is a disorder. People don't like to admit it, but they have disorders. We all do. An infirmity is a sickness, an affliction, a weakness. And he says, "This is my infirmity." Right after he asked six questions, viewing God in a negative light, in verses 7 through 9. So we have to ask, what is his particular infirmity? It could be reference to his unbelief that he so plainly expressed in verses 7 through 9. Or it may be in reference to his overall trouble that had come into his life. I tend to believe it's more the first, his unbelief, so plainly expressed in verses 7 through 9. This is my infirmity. Oh, if people could realize that unbelief is a sad disorder. It's a sickness. It's an affliction. It's a weakness. People tend to look at unbelief as no big deal. It's huge. The sins that are in unbelief are innumerable. But we're not going to get off on that. But it could refer to both. It could refer to his unbelief expressed. It can refer to his trouble. But either way, Asaph has been brought to a significant realization about himself and his life. We need that. We need to be brought to a significant realization about self. This is my infirmity. He then is brought, secondly, to see his life in the perspective of God. He says, "But in spite of my infirmity," and this is why, again, I think it's more the unbelief than anything, "but I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High." The years do not refer to God. They refer to the life of the psalmist. So he's now viewing his years, his life, through the lens of the right hand of God, through the perspective of the right hand of God. He is brought to the realization that nothing in his life, even this trouble, is outside of the right hand of God. Again, his perspective has changed. His life is now coming into proper focus. Again, 10 people can witness the exact same event and come away with 10 different views. Happens all the time. It's perspective. It's perspective. And their views, in their mind, that's reality. But if your perspective is skewed, so is your reality. So is your life. His life is coming into proper focus. So the question now we must ask is, what is meant by the right hand of the Most High? The Most High, of course, has reference to the absolute sovereignty of God. He is viewing his life in the light of the absolute sovereignty of God. The right hand, notice in Deuteronomy 33, Deuteronomy 33 and verse 2, the last part of the verse, from his right hand went a fiery law for them. There the right hand is viewed as a hand of law and arrangement. Keep that in mind, a hand of law and arrangement. In Psalm 20, Psalm 20 and verse 6. Psalms 20, verse 6. Last part of the verse again, for time's sake. The saving strength of his right hand. So it's seen now as a hand of deliverance, a hand of strength. In Psalm 118, in verse 16. The right hand of the Lord is exalted. The right hand of the Lord doeth valiantly. So it's a hand of action. It doeth. Song of Solomon 2 and verse 6. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. So it's a hand of caressing and love. So Asaph is saying here in Psalm 77, verse 10, the years of my life are conditioned by God's law and arrangement. Keeping in mind the right hand. The years of my life, there has been an unceasing manifestation of God's deliverance and God's strength. He is saying, in the years of my life, God has been active. He has done valiantly in my life. I view my years in his right hand. He is saying, throughout the years of my life, I have been caressed and loved by God. So his perspective changes in verse 10. And beginning with verse 10, he begins to view his life in the right hand of God. Really, what happens in verse 10 is the psalmist is viewing his life in the belief of Romans 8:28 before Romans 8:28 was written. That's what's happening in Psalm 77 in verse 10. Viewing his life in the hand of a sovereign God brings great joy. Because we read in Psalm 16 and verse 11, in thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand are pleasures evermore. He now is viewing, he's not just talking about God. He begins to talk to God. And he's viewing his life in the right hand of God. And again, Psalm 16 and 11, there are pleasures forevermore in the right hand. So you see, perspective makes a huge difference. Makes a huge difference. People can have the wrong perspective concerning anything. It could be anything. Doesn't matter. can be anything. And you try to convince them otherwise, good luck. Not there's such a thing as luck, but it's not going to happen. Their attitude is, don't confuse me with the facts. I've made up my mind. This is how it is. And they're troubled. And they live their life that way. But God brought the psalmist to see two things: himself and God. And he goes from talking about God to God. And oh, what a difference it makes. I do believe that there is good reason. Not that it's right. But I believe that there is good reason that some of God's people are more miserable than the lost. I believe there's a reason for that. Because the lost, for the most part, are just ignorant. They know nothing of God. Someone who comes to church all the time, they know about God. But if that's as far as it goes, or if you come to a point in your life where you get stuck and it's just about God and not talking to God, that'll make you miserable. You think upon God and it just causes you more trouble. That's what where the psalmist was in the first half of the psalm. Perspective makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference in one's life. So when you see an individual who's saved by the grace of God and they're just as miserable as can be, and we all have bad days, but I'm talking about people, they've been this way for years. Every now and then they may have 5 seconds of joy. Something is seriously wrong with their perspective. There may be other problems. We do not discount that. But you have to get to this point. Perspective is wrong. Reality is skewed. And that causes great trouble. Another thing I just noticed a few minutes ago, and we'll close. In Psalm 77, notice in the last verse, when we read it through, something else changed. In the first half, it's all about I, me, mine. But verse 20, thou ledest thy people. He's not just concerned about himself anymore. He's talking about God's people. So what a change has taken place. The first nine verses, he didn't mention a word about anyone else of God's people. It's all I. But in the second half, he ends with thy people. He realizes that God has blessed all his people. So again, many times we just need to make an honest examination of perspective. We need to make an honest examination of how am I looking at this? How am I looking at this in regard to myself, in regards to God? How am I looking at this? I'm looking at this trouble, this problem, but how do I view it? In regards to self, in regards to God. Brother Tim, if you come and lead us.